Okay, and so we are live. Welcome to This Black Girl Podcast. I am one of your hosts, Ola Miss Lola on IG.
And I am one of your other lovely hosts, this at the Hill Diva on IG. Oh my goodness, I was going to say This Black Girl Podcast. But you can call me Hill Diva, that's fine. And we have a lovely guest today, a wonderful man who we would love for you guys to get to know.
Yes. So his show is normally Lost for Words, and you can find it on most streaming platforms. But his name is also Jason. So if you'd like to share a bit about yourself with our audience, and we can start to get to know you a bit more.
Hello to all the listeners. My name is Jason. I am from Glasgow in Scotland. I'm 25. As the girls were saying, I have a podcast called Lost for Words. But by day, I guess it's a double life, but by day I am a school teacher. But not just now because it's the summer holidays. So, yeah.
So you're off now. You're free.
Yeah, we're free. Good for you.
So you must have been doing the virtual school then over in Glasgow.
Yeah, so we did it when the pandemic first started in March last year, we did the virtual schooling until the end of the term, which was June. And then we had a winter lockdown, so we did the virtual schooling from January 2021. So we stopped at the Christmas holidays, and then that was all the way through until the middle of March. So it's been a stop start a couple of years, but fingers crossed, back to normal now.
Hopefully. I'm praying for it.
Definitely.
So, before we get into more of the crazier topics, I wanted to ask you, can you share a little bit more about Lost for Words and the show itself?
So the idea behind it was, I guess it started during lockdown. I think I'd consumed a number of podcasts and thought, you know what, I would like to try it for myself. And I thought, being a teacher, I have no problems asking anyone questions. So why not have a go at asking people, adults, questions that I felt would have a story? So I guess for me, it was just a case of putting it together, thinking up guests that have a story that people would want to hear, and maybe shining a platform for things that people may not know about, but would be quite interested in and maybe shocked. So I think the aim for me is just to have as many different types of guests as possible from all different backgrounds, different political beliefs, just different sides of the street, so that you get a full flavour of what goes on in Scotland and beyond.
Wow, that is so deep. I love that. So is the emphasis more on shock value for the particular guest that you have, or is it more kind of like alternative things or independent type of businesses or this type thing, or
I would say I'm not in for the shock factor as such. I think it's more, I like to think of it as being more nuanced than deep. I guess it would be more businesses, like, for example, the one that was the most recent one was like a youth work charity. So there's no shock factor there other than these people just trying to do good by the young people in our city. And it's just things like that. It's more shining a light on a deep, sometimes positive, sometimes negative story that it's like for the lockdown as well. I thought it helps me to get through and realize that your life is only one. You're only one tiny speck in the big world. So it's giving people an insight into other people's lives and stories.
Mm-hmm. No, I love that. That's awesome.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I guess I wanna pivot, I guess, into that. And I'm trying to think of the best way to word it. But so exploring and meeting all of these different people, hearing different, different lifestyles, different factors, political beliefs, like you said. Has that in any way changed how you see not only just like the world, but how you see yourself? Like, has it changed your mind to certain topics or certain beliefs that maybe you used to hold, but you don't hold it anymore?
I think it's definitely made me more tolerant and accepting of other beliefs. I think interviewing people that I might disagree with, say politically, but their reason for feeling that way is as legit as my reason for not feeling that way. And I think I've come a long way in coming to terms with that. And I think as about me, other than that, it is more just making myself more aware of my contribution to the world and that my goings on, as I say, I'm just one small person, that it's made me more aware of other people have problems, other people have good things and bad things, and I'm just there. You have to view yourself relative to the world. And it's probably made me a bit more grounded, which I would say is a good thing, because sometimes I used to think to myself, I get caught up in my own thoughts, whereas it's nice to hear other people's thoughts and you can rationalise yourself against them.
Yeah, wonderful. I love that. And it shows that you're just open and you're not just willing to write someone off right away because of what you see. I mean, when I first saw you, Jason, I did not expect you to have an accent like that. I was shocked when I heard you talk. I was like, oh my goodness. Okay. And also you look kind of racially ambiguous as well. So I was like, okay, I wonder what his background is. So when you said you're half Scottish, was it half Jamaican the other side?
Yeah, so my dad is from Jamaica. So in the 1950s, it's called, so the British Empire, they, after the war, they had the boats from the Caribbean islands that took people back over to rebuild the country after the wars. And my gran and granddad happened to be two of those people that were on the boats. Mm-hmm. They settled in London. They had my dad, my mum had lived in London. And then that they got together and now I'm here. So yeah, that's...
I think that is really cool that you have at least somewhat clear understanding of at least like one or two generations of your background. Because yeah,
exactly.
A lot of you know, Black people, mixed people don't have a full comprehension of that, especially like with the family tree, like,
for sure,
where you came from, why you came from there. Like, my family is also Jamaican, but like there's a little mix of like British in there and Irish and whatever. But I don't always have the clear picture. I just know like what my mom knows, and my mom knows what she was told from like her grandparents or her parents, yeah, right? But that's really cool that you actually know, like, no, they came from here and this is why.
And now they're dead. Exactly. I love it.
I think that's really awesome.
And one thing I was also going to ask you about was growing up, so you are both, so you're as a biracial child, you're both, you know, Irish and, excuse me, Scottish, but you're also Jamaican. What are the two communities like in Glasgow? Do you find that there is like a thriving Caribbean community out there, or do you find that were you like the only child of multi-race, or the only African?
So there's not much of a scene. So I've been raised in Glasgow, but my mum and dad were never really together. She came up to have a child to raise me in Glasgow because she felt safer raising a child in Glasgow than London. So I've got more of the Caribbean community in London, because London's just a melting pot for all creeds and colours and sects. But up here it's not so diverse, but it's never been an issue. I guess I've always seen myself as having my white life in Scotland and then my Black life in London.
Interesting. That's so different.
But okay, so then you said it hasn't affected necessarily growing up, but you do admit that you have like a bit of a split life. Have you, because of your racial ambiguousness, I need to ask this question, because there's a lot of microaggressions that sometimes white people like to say or like to do, and they don't realize that like it's offensive or it's rude. Have you ever been in like an awkward situation where somebody says something kind of generic or stereotypical about, you know, Black people, and you're just like...
Not really, because it's not, Glasgow's a fairly tolerant city.
Okay.
Okay. And I would probably get away with just being not quite black enough. I think the way I would describe myself is if Scottish people are very pale because it's cold here. So if the Scottish people go on holiday to Spain for a couple of weeks, they'll come back with a tan. I just look like that. I'm fairly caramel stroke olive. So you could look at me and think he's just got a nice tan, whereas I'm maybe not quite dark enough to be profiled in that way. Does that make sense?
Right, yeah, no. Sorry, yeah, it makes complete sense. I was going to say, because Lola has a beautiful daughter, my sweet little baby girl, and she's got the same skin tone. Like, she's very, very light skin tone. Shockingly light. Like, I think she's probably one of the lightest biracial children I've seen. She's so adorable.
I usually blame that on the bit of whiteness in my family. Because I'm like,
what, like a fifth? So how dark is her dad?
Not at all. Like,
not at all, right.
Very, very pale, very light skin, very white. And so I guess she took the little bit of whiteness I had in myself and all the whiteness he had and just came out into a...
She ran.
Nice, we call her white skin. She's a nice light skin, whatever. It's fine. But...
Yeah. But yeah, it's definitely a different landscape, like that, the community in Glasgow than here. So that's why we were asking about that, because it's just interesting to know, for example, how much Caribbean culture and Caribbean influence there even is in different countries. Here in Canada, we have, like, it's grown so much since I was a girl. I just remember growing up and being usually the only, like, one of two Black people in my class. And then as I got older, a lot more and more people started, I guess, coming to that particular area I lived in. And now it's like completely mixed, so mixed in Canada. And I wouldn't even call it a melting pot, because I remember you referring to when you're in London, kind of like a melting pot. But I feel like in Canada, we celebrate so much backgrounds. Like, everyone's like, oh, I'm, you know, Jamaican Canadian, I'm Bajan Canadian, I'm, you know, Italian Canadian. People are so proud of what they are. So it just, I feel here so much more fun, you know, when you meet people, because it's kind of celebrated here, you know, whereas I don't feel like a lot of other Western countries celebrate as much. I don't know if you have an opinion on that.
No, I would definitely say it isn't celebrated as much here. So if I had to go into the United Kingdom as a bigger area compared to Glasgow and Scotland, there are certainly racial undertones at play that are definitely, you go back to, like, if you'd say, example, my gran and granddad, that generation that came over on the boats were called the Windrush generation. And since that has happened, when they came over, there was a lot of failing to document them being here, sort of thing. So they came over, they'd worked for years and years and years, and it got to the point where then they were old enough for a pension, and because the state had never documented them, they were sent back to Jamaica. So it's the opposite sometimes goes on of celebrating the cultures, and that's probably one of my biggest gripes about this, the United Kingdom, is it's not, they don't celebrate these things enough, when the contribution in society of Jamaicans, Cubans, any country you can name that have come here and have planted roots and have helped to make the society the privileged place that it is, they aren't celebrated enough. And it's probably one of the main failings of this country.
That's fair. Ironically enough, it's been put out in the news that the country of Jamaica is currently demanding reparations from the United Kingdom because of all of this. That's just so sad. Gosh, like,
I know.
It sounds funny to say, like, me personally now, if somebody was like, go back to Jamaica, I'd be like, please, please, I'd love to go right now. Enjoy the sun, the weather, all of that stuff. But nobody realizes, like, okay, well, if you're there now in another country, you have to essentially start all over again. And that's the part that's so hard, where you just, like, you have to find a place to live, get a job or whatever, or take up farming or whatever choice that you have to make. But the whole point is you have to start all over again. And that sucks.
But I think, see, comments like that, it's silly and it's throwaway. And I think it always says more about the person that is giving the comment than to the person that's receiving it. It's almost I think it's mostly born out of jealousy, because these things are said when if you're the recipient of it, that person perceives you to have something that they want. So you almost could take it as, it shouldn't be said at all, but it should be a compliment. If they're saying they get you get back to Jamaica, it's because you're contributing something to the society that they aren't, or that they wish you weren't. That's my view anyway.
Right. That's fair.
And that's interesting too, because this topic actually also leads us to an interesting topic that happened this week. Did you watch the game on Sunday?
Yes, I was hoping you'd ask me about this. Yeah.
Yes. Oh my gosh. So the three black players on Team England who missed off apparently were subjected to a lot of racial slurs and harassment online. So what are your views on that? Did you watch the full game, everything? How did you feel? And what has like the fallout been in Glasgow, if any, if the government or anybody has made any comments?
So I, as soon as I was in my friend's house watching the game, and as soon as the three players had missed, I said to my friends, wait till you see the fallout from this, because the two white players scored the first two penalties and then the three black boys have missed. And I say boys because they were young, 23, 21 and 19, just kids, especially the last, Saka, who's 19, that to have the courage to go up and do it in the first place. So the fallout from it has been insane, but it's well merited. You see, it's just the ugly side of English culture, really. Luckily, we in Scotland are slightly separated, and I like to think of us as being different. But it's the type of thing that it rears its ugly head, and it rears its ugly head so often that it's not an event anymore. This is the way people think. And that's really sad in itself. And this, the boy Rashford, who's one of the players that missed, I don't know if you've seen all the stuff that he's done for children. He has raised, I think, £200 million to feed starving children in this country through the lockdown. And you just knew as soon as, it's the type of thing where when the team are winning, the English national team are winning, it's all of us together. But when the three players missed, that's when they win together, but when they lose, they need a scapegoat. And it just happened to be the racial stereotype that got trotted out.
Yeah, it's right. Such a shame. It really is such a shame. Like, I know Prime Minister condemned the actions. I know, like, Prince William made a statement or whatever. But, like, the only moment that I saw, at least on social media, was from Saka's hometown, because somebody had vandalized his mural. And somebody saw it, came across, they covered it up, and then like everybody from the town was putting like all these positive uplifting messages, leaving him cards and stuff, which I thought was like, that was really heartwarming to see, that even though there are the angry, intolerant, miserable minority that probably can't even kick a football, let alone score a goal, be the loudest sometimes, unfortunately, for these players.
So true. And I hear that a lot of it too. Sometimes it's I was just gonna say a lot of times like it ruins their careers. So that's the saddest part too. Like to be young as 19 and to potentially have your career ruined because of racism and because of how serious these people take these sports. I would hate to see that happen for him.
But see as well that against the backdrop, so at the start of the tournament, as you'll know, the Black Lives Matter, they do the taking the knee at the start of the games. So if we rewound to the start of the tournament, the Prime Minister and the Home Secretary in this country, so she'd be the person that's in charge of like foreign relations and diplomatic ties with other countries. She's in charge of immigration. Mm-hmm. This woman's name is Priti Patel. So Priti Patel, at the start of the tournament, had said that the England players who were taking a knee, it was a political gesture, and she encouraged people to boo. And this is the Home Secretary. Wow. She's an Asian woman as well. Look her up. She's brown skin. She's darker skin than me.
Wow.
Yeah. So she was telling people they had every right to boo taking the knee, and then she after the game tweeted out saying, it's disgusting that people give these boys racist abuse. And one of the England players actually replied to her saying, no, you can't stoke the fire at the start of the tournament and then pretend to be angry when the exact thing that we're campaigning against happens.
Yeah.
So no. That's the type of the government, in my opinion, exactly. People would disagree, that's fair. But the government, in my opinion, mm-hmm. they create the environment for these people to thrive.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. I agree. That's a shame. Well, hopefully, I'm hoping that it doesn't hurt like those. It doesn't hurt their self-esteem that they continue to flourish, because a lot of people, and especially a lot of sports fans in general, they tend to forget, like, be happy you were even in the finals. Be happy yeah. you were even in the finals to just happen to lose, right? And it's sometimes a game of chance. Like, they're professional athletes, yes, but they're also playing against other professional athletes. This isn't like a computer program. This isn't something that could, oh, if you switched one wire, you would have won. Like, it's just, it is a game of chance. And that's the chance when you participate. You're either going to win or you're going to lose. And unfortunately, England was the country to lose. But they should be proud and be happy and celebrating these players for even being in the finals to begin with. So.
Yeah.
For sure. For sure. And I was also going to add to that, I'm very surprised at that woman that you just mentioned, Prati Patel or whatever her name, I'm sorry.
Yeah, Prati
Patel. Either way, I'm very just shocked that someone, a member of government, could openly condemn, someone who's standing up for racial equality. Like, I'm very shocked, because over here on the West, in the West over here, it's been such a large wave of, diversity and inclusion. A lot of companies are now respecting, that the fact that Black people, they're recognizing that the fact that Black people have for a long time, been in the back seat, and they're trying hard to kind of repair those ties, and at least make it seem like they're trying to. So yeah. For you guys to still be back in time, it feels so just primal to hear that someone who's in government is openly speaking against racial equality. Like, that's shocking to me. So
it's, wow. Yeah, and it's just that people, so even if people had the will to improve, I guess that she is only one person, but she is one person that happens to be in charge of immigration and foreign policy in this country. She is an extremely powerful lady. So for her to be as stoking the fire, so open, leaving the door open to people like bringing up their ugliness and their booing, like, as you say, she was allowing and practically encouraging men
exactly.
to show a distaste for multiracial athletes who are trying to make a stand against racism. And it's how can we as a country move on when that's the people that are in charge? It's, I don't want to sound like I'm bashing them, but that, see, if you say things like that and you're in that position, it's how can you help? Like, it's wrong. And this is the thing, she is a second or third generation immigrant herself, which is yeah, like, that's very cliche, but it's, you're lost for words talking about it. How can you even comprehend the logic?
I feel like, though, personally, there is a disconnect with certain other races sometimes when they are not Black. So you mentioned, like, she's an Asian woman, and I know, especially like here on this side of the pond, there's been a lot of hate against Asian people as well, especially with COVID and coronavirus. Yeah. So it's like, I don't want to call it, like, it's not a struggle wars. Who's been struggling more? Was it the Black people or the Asian people or the Irish people or whatever? Like, everybody has their own plight one way or another. And I just feel like it's sad when there's that lack of empathy or that lack of understanding because they've had their own personal issues or their own personal struggles. Because I always hear, unfortunately, sometimes from other races that it's like, well, slavery was a long time ago. We're having, like, there's people beating up Asian people in the streets right now. And it's like, that is also accurate and valid, but there's also Black people dying every day. And there's still a lot of Black people that are suffering from systemic racism from that 400 years ago. So what are we going to relate, or what's going to happen here with this? Like, And
I think it's everybody should be playing for the same team, though. It isn't a. It's not a case of, right, we're more oppressed than you, as you say. It isn't a. We do this for us more than we do it for you. But everybody, equality should be the end goal.
Exactly.
I definitely agree. But
yeah, so do I.
But I think we should perhaps maybe pivot from the subject. Because we could talk about this forever. That's the only thing we can talk about. But I want to get into, I guess, the meat and potatoes of us all linking here. I do want to ask kind of more in towards the dating and relationship space. You did specify that you are a bit young. You're a bit younger than us, just to say. We don't look it, because, you know, black don't crack.
No.
But we are a bit younger or a bit older than you. And I want to ask, I guess, especially with COVID going on, how, like, first of all, are you single, yay or nay?
No.
So you're in a relationship right now?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. And how long has this relationship been?
Just under a year, I would say. Yeah, just under a year.
So you got into this relationship during COVID, during quarantine?
During the window last year when things were open. Woo! So in the time between things opening back up and closing back down.
Okay, so you went snatched up this person real quick. You're like, you're
my... You wasted no time. Snatched with the quickness.
Because my question was going to be like, how... well, I guess I could still kind of ask it. Like, how has it been dating while in quarantine? Because like over here, it for a while it was don't see anybody, and if you are going to be around people, it's people you're trapped in the house with. So exactly. A lot of couples were either not seeing each other for long periods of time or stuck together for a lot of long periods of time.
I would say that the same thing happened here in terms of you had the two extremes. There wasn't really anything in the middle. You either had the people who stood by the rules to the letter, or you had the people that were just openly going out and doing their own thing anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there was much, but there wasn't really space to come and go, as you say. And there were either couples that stayed to get live together. There were couples. I have a couple of friends who don't live together, or didn't at the time, sorry, and didn't see each other for weeks. Did totally stuck to the rules, and you think, geez, fair play to you, but.
I mean, I would question his love. I'm sorry. Just kidding. I don't know, man. Like, for me, I could not spend the whole of quarantine. Like, I don't have enough batteries for that. To not see my person the whole. I don't know, man. I mean, in the beginning of quarantine, definitely, when in like end of 2019, when it first broke out. But like, as it got to like the end of 2020, it was more relaxed. Once people started getting vaccinated and stuff, like that helped too, you know. So, I mean, I don't know, man. To not see, I don't know if I could do that. I'd be very upset.
I think there was definitely a known difference between, so say you had lockdown one, which was March to June 2020 versus lockdown two, which was January this year to March, April. I think by the time you got to this year, people had already been through the cycle before. The virus was known, that there's less of a fear when you know what's in front of you. So I definitely say as time's gone on, people sticking to the rules has lessened off, and that's translated into dating.
Yeah.
But for me personally at the time, go tell us about your date.
No, it's not big. I was just gonna say I had went on not a date, sorry, but one dating app in the beginning of COVID. And I remember a guy had just said, you know, first question, are you willing to meet up? And I'm like, no, you know. And then he's like, sorry, I want someone who's not scared. Boom. And I was just like, wow, like you either had the extreme people like that who just wanted to meet and didn't give a damn. But I found the majority of people were kind of like-minded here in Canada. Like a lot of people were legitimately kind of worried. But you said your experience. I'd like to hear about that.
So me, I think the first time being single through the first one, I didn't really bother because I was still doing the virtual teaching to begin with. And I was quite content. It was all new. It was interesting. I think the main rush that I got we weren't supposed to see our friends, but I think me and my friends continued to see each other. And that was our sort of, we were all mainly single. So that was our quite right. We could just, if we're all going to get, we call it a bubble here. So you form a bubble.
Yeah.
We were a bubble with each other. So that was our, they didn't really have to, not they didn't have to have a partner, but that's what got us through. Then I think you got to June, July time, things started to slowly open back up. Ventured back on to Tinder, I think it was, yeah, Tinder. And people were more willing to go out because the restrictions had been lifted. And then that's it. Just started speaking to this girl, went and met her. But then I think first met her September. And quite quickly started to notice, right, I think the COVID's going to get worse again. So I thought, quite like her, we'll press ahead and get her before another lockdown hits, I guess. That's me being brutalist. I don't know how much she would be enamoured by me saying that, but that was my logic. Make sure we get her tied down before lockdown wipes us out.
Yeah, we're not
fair enough. Okay. And I'm assuming you guys are quite happy because you've been together for at least almost a year.
I hope so.
I'm just saying.
Because I can't speak for her.
That is true. We're assuming that she's happy because you seem like a nice guy. You seem well-rounded. Yeah. You know, you work as a teacher. Like, you're just checking off all the good guys, you know? So, yes. I guess, are you guys living together now? Or are you
not living together. So she lives in a different city. So okay. She lives maybe half an hour away.
Oh, that's not bad.
But no, not too bad, not too bad.
Okay, and then I'm assuming you guys see each other at least as frequently as restrictions would allow.
As frequently as restrictions. So the restrictions include you're allowed to form a bubble with a non-cohabiting partner, I believe the term it is. So me and her are allowed to see each other regardless. But I guess I've been able to see her more because I'm a teacher and I've got the time off.
Okay.
I don't think she's not too chuffed with the COVID, but that's I'm sure she'll survive 5 or 6 days of not seeing me. I would hope.
Well, I think most normal people could hopefully survive like a week, you know? Yeah. And I guess, okay, I'm going to ask you this question because I asked our last guest this question. It was very interesting. What was, I guess, aside from lockdowns and time crunches, what was the deciding factor for you to decide, like, this is my person? Like, what were those? Because you said that, like, you liked her well enough. What were those things that you liked about her?
So in terms of, like, my, this sounds really basic, that might sound really terrible, but it's like my number one question is she going to turn into a bitch? And I was quite content that the answer was going to be no. She's quite level-headed. She doesn't get too high with the highs or too low with the lows, okay. Which appeals to me because I'm 25. I'm probably too old to be involved in a lot of drama. But I still, I like to think of myself as young enough to still want to go out and do things and have fun. So yeah. Finding someone that was aligned with me that way. So she's fairly, I see her as someone who's on the same boat. Mm-hmm. And that helps. So she's, yeah, in terms of there wouldn't be a personality clash because I would say I don't think I'm the easiest person to be with because I don't need a lot of reassurance or deep emotional connection. I'm easy ozy. And I need to make sure that she isn't someone who needs that deep validation. Does that make sense? I don't want to sound like I'm disparaging
that makes perfect sense. I actually find it really interesting that, like, you're self-aware to know that you don't need certain, like, deeper emotional things. Like, because some women I don't want to use the term needy, but some women need that. Some women need that reassurance to be like, do you love me, baby? Do you like this? Am I happy? And then you're just like, yeah.
See, that would completely alienate me and rub me the wrong way. So I'm quite open with people that I'm dating and tell them, if you're like that, then this probably isn't going to work, because I am very independent. And I think any partner for me has to complement that rather than become a part. Does that make sense? That it's an addition of me rather than a fully fledged sort of conjoined twin part of me.
Exactly. Right.
Like growing out of the shoulder.
That's so funny. God, so funny. And it's true. Like, you still have to maintain your independence in a relationship. Like, I'm definitely the same way. Now, do you feel like the type of personality that you are? You said, you know, you're still young enough to go out and enjoy yourself. Do you particularly like a woman that's extrovert, or are you more drawn to an introvert type person?
Ooh, that's a good question. Probably, I would say slightly more introvert, because I think extrovert, as you get older, becomes problematic. I would say, like, if I think of myself 5 years ago, I think extroverts, if you're extrovert, you've more, I sometimes think they display more the traits of needing to be loved and needing to be accepted by a group of people. Whereas I think if you're introverted, as you get older, you're more content and happy with your, like, I've got my lot and I am fine. And I probably find that easier to be with someone who isn't seeking other sources of attention. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, no outward validation. That makes complete sense. And it's like introverts are like the lone wolf, so they're not depending on any kind of support or, you know, all the time. At least.
Yeah.
So it makes
sense. Well, like, they're definitely the type of people who can be completely satisfied being by themselves. Compared to an extrovert that's like, I need a group of people, or I need like my circle of friends in order to feel entertained or happy. And then there's some people that are kind of in the middle, like myself. I used to think I was very extroverted, and I found that I'm actually more ambivert, which is like a bit of both, where it's like, I can hang with the group, we can have fun, it could be all, blah, blah, blah. But then other times I'm just like, I need to be by myself.
So what effect, like, would you say then, if you're ambivert and you've got that bit of extrovert in you, what effect does like being locked down and stuck inside have for that?
I mean, I get the cabin fever sometimes, where I'm like, I need to go somewhere, I need to go on a vacation, I need to, you know, or I need to do something, but I tend to kind of get that out in crafting, like for myself. Like, I do a lot of crafts. I have like my own separate business from my day job. And so any of those types of urges to do something, I usually put it out in being like creative, whether it's making shirts, designing nails, like filling orders, doing whatever. So, and then the other times where I am very introverted and just like, I'm cool with being by myself, I am self-care mode, face masks and everything. Like, Hilkiva knows, I'm always telling her, do a face mask. Yes. She's like, I don't have time now. I don't have time.
I know. She's like, her skin routine is on lock. I'm telling you, there was a lockdown before lockdown on her skin routine. Like, she didn't play.
Trust me. I literally have a fridge for all of my skin, like skin serums and stuff like that.
A fridge for skin stuff? Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
I'm very passionate about my skin.
Yes, they're her babies. Yeah. They're her babies, honestly. And your skin looks amazing, by the way. Okay. I wish I could have the like self-dedication that she has to just sit and do all that. I'm the type to just want to like book a facial and just go to somebody or something. But like every day, I'm like, oh my God, I can't remember all the different stuff. But she's going to turn me on to something. I'm going to come to you for something soon. Okay. I was going to ask what... Mr. Jason, I was going to ask you, what were you doing mainly during lockdown? Since, you know, I know you were teaching, but how did you unwind? Because I know a lot of people had burnout. Like, there should have been parental burnout for teachers, because I was like telling my friends that were teachers, like, whatever they're paying you, triple it. Because since my kids have been home with me all day when they were supposed to be with you, like,
accurate. This is, that's,
This is ludicrous.
I was going to say, can we pause for 1 second? Because I just want to say, as a teacher that is dedicated to educating young minds, encouraging them, because like we both have kids, and like you hear the online learning in the background and you hear the amount of care and patience that teachers have. Mm-hmm. And as a teacher yourself, I want to thank you for it, because I don't have it. I don't. So I appreciate the work that you do and the effort that's being put in through all teachers during lockdown, because it's a skill that I don't possess.
Oh yeah.
Or, well, on if I speak in my as a spokesperson of all teachers, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Yes, you guys deserve a shrine. There needs to be a shrine for like the great pandemic of 2020. Like, honestly, there needs to be a shrine for all the teachers, nurses, doctors, frontline workers. Like,
accurate.
This was such a paranoia-filled time, and unlike anything, you know, the modern population has seen. So, you know, besides, I would say SARS, and this was even worse because we actually literally locked down for extended periods of time, kids getting pulled out of school. And that used to be my secret, like, nightmare, my Armageddon. Like, what if there was no school system? I swear to God, I thought that one day. And then, boom, like a year later, COVID hit. I'm like, why? I feel like I jinxed that. I don't know.
Girl, you manifested COVID-19. Is that what you're saying?
I don't even want to say it or put it out there, but I think I'm mad. Don't come for me. Don't come for me.
Yes, speak it, believe it, receive it.
Oh my gosh.
Exactly. So what were you doing? What were you speaking, believing, and receiving in lockdown?
So my big thing was, I pretty much taught myself how to cook was the big thing for me. Nice. So I had, for years, I had a slow cooker. And I'd never used it. And I knew, so my mum, God rest her soul, so she passed away 3.5 years ago. And she had this little black book that was slow cooker recipes. And I thought, do you know what? This is the time to, I've got the time now to teach myself. So I mainly did that, to be honest. So slow cooker recipes, just learning how to cook. I had managed to get a lot of fitness equipment for the house, which I was able to still exercise and stuff like that. But I would say definitely the cooking was the big thing.
Oh my God.
I'd spent a lot more time doing that than I would have had being in work and having to do work things in the house.
For sure.
Fair enough.
That was,
I want to say, like, our deepest condolences for you.
No,
that's, for sure, because I love my mom. I don't know what I'd do without her. And you are a lot younger than us. So it's like, at my big, big age, if I did not have my mom, I'd lose my mind. And so I feel for you, not in a pitiful way, but in like, oh, like, I'm sorry, you know? But
it's okay.
I'm glad.
It's okay. Thank you.
I'm sorry. But yeah. I'm mm-hmm. glad.
But kudos to you for the cooking.
I was going to say, yeah.
That's amazing. A lot of people have been baking bread, though. I thought you were gonna say
banana bread.
Well, I'm glad you got a chance to like explore all of those recipes, and you had something to kind of like, connect with her in that kind of sense. And I think that's like really sweet and very heartwarming. And I love a good slow cooker recipe. I find them super convenient. You can start it even from the night before or the morning, and then you can leave your house and come back home in the evening and you have like the perfect meal.
Thank you. That's exactly it.
It was quite wholesome, and I would never eat like chili or curry in another way now, because it's the slow cooker's the way to go for it.
Game changer.
Yeah, I'm massively
curry chicken in the slow cooker.
Chef kiss.
Yeah, chef's kiss.
I was gonna say, I bet a lot of men have learned to cook now because of COVID. So, like, all of these future generations can thank COVID for their husbands knowing how to cook, because so many men were left to fend for themselves, right? So, your girlfriend's lucky. She got a good one.
So kind of pivoting back, we were talking about relationships. So like, you and your partner, you guys don't live together, but you guys see each other within reason. and you guys have yourselves as like a bubble, and you told us why you like her and stuff, which is really cute. My question to you is, what would be like a deal breaker for you? I know you said that if a woman is very kind of like needing reassurance, that it turns you off because that's not the type of person you are. But like, what else would be, I guess, a deal breaker for you?
Ooh, good question. So I would say, I don't think I could be with someone that smoked, which sounds terrible, right? And I admit, because it's, everyone has a personal choice, but because, like, as I was saying about my mum, she had a lung condition. So I couldn't then be with someone who was willingly, just not destroying, but willingly putting themselves at harm in the way that, that was something that meant something to me. I don't want to go on about that, like, because it's not in a, but it's just, it would be like a, no, that's just, I wouldn't feel comfortable doing it. And that's not even, it's not even a reflection on them. That's just my own. Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's fair.
Yeah, I used to be the same. Yeah, I used to be the exact same because I didn't even care about anything specific. I just didn't like the smell of cigarette smoke. I could not stand, yeah. I would not date someone who smoked cigarettes. Yeah. But I mean, but then weed, for some reason, weed didn't bother me. I just, so I, you know what I mean? So it, that's a very good reason. And it's a very, you know, touchy reason. So that makes complete sense, you know, and it's your preference.
Yeah, absolutely valid. I guess, okay, so then to lighten it up then, what would be a more, I guess, superficial deal breaker or turn off for you then?
A turn off, ooh.
Yeah, something that's more superficial. Like for me, I can't unfortunately date short men.
Right, okay. Well, how short is short?
Well, to put in perspective, I'm 5'10". So 172 centimeters. So, or I don't know, 175, I think. So I'm fairly tall. I'm a very tall woman. And I prefer men that are taller than me.
Right.
So, yeah.
6 foot and beyond.
Something more superficial. Mm-hmm. I don't think I could date someone who was really, really badly out of shape or obese.
Okay.
But I just that makes me sound terrible, but it's my truthful answer, so I'm not gonna lie. Because I again value, I think keeping yourself reasonably fit is it's good for you. And my like background before I was a teacher, I did I'm qualified as a PE teacher before that. So sport and fitness has always been part of my life. That's probably my superficial thing.
Okay, that's fair.
Yeah, my superficial thing is not even really superficial. It's like, if you don't go down, like, sorry, I'm not gonna lie. It's not even like you can't really see, you know, and tell if somebody is my type, but it's more of a, like a philosophy. What's the philosophy about going down? You know,
that's fair enough.
If you don't go down, you can't come around. Like, that's what it is.
Down, Mr. Brown.
It is what it is.
So what would you do if that happened? Like, what happens then? What's the conversation that would need to take place?
Oh, so you're saying if I'm having that conversation, like, hey, do you go down? And they say no.
Yeah.
Oh, then I say, okay, nice. It was nice meeting you. Take care. Gotta go. Like, there's nothing more to say. There's really nothing more to say. And then, I mean, the answer, I guess, you know what I mean? Like, it's more, I just end it right away. I don't waste my time. I don't have time to waste. I wouldn't want to waste anyone else's time. So I'm just like, gotta go. And then they're usually like, what? Really? I'm like, yeah, I'm not kidding. Yeah. Like, that's life. It's part of life. That's it. You know, it's just like, if you don't like, you know, you don't like tomatoes on your sandwich, no problem. I like my tomatoes well minced. I don't know how to do the metaphor here. It didn't work out. But I tried.
No, we get it. I don't know.
It's but I was going to say too.
Yeah, sorry. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, go.
Okay, I was actually going to ask just as a final question about your podcast, Lost for Words. Mm-hmm. I also wanted to say you said it so quickly in the beginning with your accent that it sounded like you said La Favor, and I'm like, what? And then I can see your little avatar here that says Lost for Words. It's a nice little logo. But
my final question kind of was there some kind of stereotype or previous preconceived notion that you had going into a particular interview with a particular person, and that you were completely shocked? Like, were you expecting someone to be a certain way who then, you know, opened your eyes? What would that be, like, your most memorable guest or moment kind of thing?
Well, I would say, so there's one interview where I don't know politically wise, but I would say I'm not a conservative. And there was a man who came on who was a conservative, and he was telling me about his reasons for being a conservative and his background. So one of the, if you think about our city, so the west end of Glasgow is far more affluent than the east end where I am from. And he was basically telling me about his life story. He was in the Marines and the Naval Air Force, sorry. And the only reason he represented our area was because his party decided he wasn't posh enough to represent the posh area.
Wow.
And I thought, geez, that's quite interesting. It's quite interesting. My preconceived notion of what conservatives are was totally blown away by him being basically admitting, I only represent you because the party decided I wasn't posh enough to represent the posh people.
Wow. That's dry.
Wow.
Yeah, it was crazy.
Wow.
That is crazy. That is extremely crazy. And then it shows you that political motives are not always, oh, because of my beliefs. This man just wanted to get his bag. He's like, they won't let me get the bag over there, so I'm going to go get that bag or money, you know, with you guys. You know what I mean? So, like, how dedicated is he to his party? You know what I mean? So,
ooh. That's a shame. Truly, truly. That's, wow. That's just graceful. And he said that in 4K on your show.
He said, yeah, he was quite open about it, that he was, yeah, the party didn't feel he was quite posh enough to represent the posh area. Therefore, he was brought to our area because they felt his story would resonate better with the people. That's so right. To put it politely, yeah, he wasn't posh enough.
I see.
Wow. Okay.
Wow, you're too poor to get people on board our team.
You're not rich enough for the rich people, sorry.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh my god.
Basically, that is what happened.
Yikes.
Wow.
Well, we are almost at time, so I'm going to kindly ask for you to just share again with our audience, like, where they can find your episodes, where they can find the podcast Lost for Words, and connect with you on social media.
So Lost for Words is available on most major streaming platforms. I don't think it's unavailable on any of them, as far as I know. You can connect with the podcast on Twitter and Instagram. It's at Lost for Words Pod with P-O-D at the end. If you want to follow me, my own Instagram is at IRVNJAY, and I mainly post pictures of going hill walking. So if you want to see a bit of Scotland, hit me up. You're more than welcome. But no, podcast is at Lost for Words Pod on Twitter and Instagram, and you can find it wherever you get your podcasts.
Wonderful.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. We loved connecting.
Yes, it's very awesome.
And, you know, hearing about more about your life, more about, like, just experiences, especially in Scotland. It is a beautiful place I hope to eventually reach. And if I do, I know I have a friend to be like, hey.
You're more than welcome. Thanks. Thank you so much for having me.
I love it. Didn't they shoot the Lord of the Rings?